Taking a look at home renovation and repair here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radios. Might take a little look ahead to some early fall projects. A little cooler across the state today. It won't be long, unfortunately, before the cooler weather gets in and we get to the point where, you know, it becomes a little bit uncomfortable working outside. So we can talk about those kinds of things relating to your home as well, along with windows and other things, with our two guests for today. Ken Adams of Adams Design Construction in Madison. Ken, great to see you back.
It's always good to see you too, Larry.
And John Freiberger of Freiberger and Associates in Fitchburg. And John, great to have you back as well.
Glad to be here, Larry.
Well, you guys busy, by the way? Lots going on?
We're always busy, you know. Is it a good thing? Well, on a good day, yes. Yeah, we're busy. I think John's, you know, going to the wall, too.
Well, we stopped working 7-day weeks in June.
Oh, good. So you're slowing down.
We're slowing down. We're down to 6-day weeks.
Well, that's good. Well, windows, I want to, before we take calls, and by the way, you can join in at 1-800-642-1234 or email us at talk@wpr.org. Or maybe you've got a photo that would help explain a question. You can send that photo to our Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show, and we can show that as well. But John and I were talking before the show about windows, and I know, John, you have some new data regarding the best windows and maybe the ones that aren't so good?
Well, we have data, Larry, from Oak Ridge National Laboratory, who actually have done a lot of window testing, because it's difficult to know exactly how people are testing windows when they say what the R value is. Is it the warmest piece of glass with the most resistance? Is it the average R value? You know, what exactly is it? How reliable are they? So it was nice to see that the Oak Ridge National Lab, who has no dog in the fight, actually did some testing. And if you look at the data, you find that you can have windows like mine, which are 150 years old, single pane glass with a storm window. And you can spend a lot of money replacing with half-inch thermal pane, and the R factor is exactly the same.
Huh?
And there has been a problem in the industry, and you know, both Ken and I see this. I inspect a house that had new windows, replacement windows, put in 10 or 15 years before. The exterior of the windows is made out of finger-jointed wood, little pieces of wood 6 inches to a foot long, basically scrap wood from other things. And these windows have basically rotted away. Mm-hmm. One of the big problems we've had over the years, and both Ken and I have restored a lot of windows, is there aren't any national standards. Well, now we're going to have national standards, which is nice. There are at least 2,500 contractors in the U.S. that do window repairs, and we're going to have the Window Preservation Standard Collaborative coming out with a book this fall, which would be available online to people like Ken and I who really want to have a standard to meet. The Preservation Trades Network and the Kentucky Heritage Project are partners in this, and they're soliciting information from contractors like Ken and I and specifiers like myself to help put together these standards. So once we have this, we're going to have something that is a little bit more objective to work with when we are dealing with houses with old windows and trying to determine what does window restoration mean versus window replacement. Mm-hmm. So something, I think, very helpful forward step for us all.
Well, it sounds great, and I'm sure we'll be able to, once that comes out, we'll be able to talk a bit more about it as time goes on.
As soon as the book is in, I may be hoping the next time we see or the time after that I've got a copy of that and I can tell people how to reach it if they're thinking and thinking about doing window replacement or preservation.
Well, in the meantime, Mary in La Crosse has a question. I think it might relate to shingles. So let's go to Mary. Hi, Mary. Thank you for calling.
Thank you. I think it was probably the same two gentlemen I talked to in 2002 about new roofing for my house, and I followed their advice, and I contacted the extension office and got contract material, and I remember talking to you about fiberglass versus asphalt, and ended up with CertainTeed asphalt shingles. Well, because I listened to you folks, I knew that there had been a recall, and they failed. And I don't have a computer, but my son does, so he got on the computer. But I am just wondering now, what happened to those shingles? And And because there was a tornado in May and bad hail in June, I've been told good luck finding a roofer this summer, so we'll probably have to wait till next spring to re-roof. But what kind of advice are you going to give me now for a kind of shingle to go with?
Mm-hmm. All right. Ken, well, let's turn to you, Ken.
Yeah, well, CertainTeed did have some problems with their asphalt shingles over about a five-year period, if I remember correctly. And I think that they have that resolved now. Since 2000, we were talking, I don't recall the conversation, but I do know that in the late 1990s and early 2000s, fiberglass shingles were basically asphalt shingles with a fiberglass mesh in them, and that they're very good shingles. They have a little bit longer life expectancy, except that if you put them on in inclement weather, whether it be very hot or very cold weather, they can crack in very cold weather and they can tear in very hot weather. So application's critical. I'd be surprised that you'd find it really difficult to find a roofer that you could at least lock into at this point. Can you tell me how your shingles failed? Were they
are crinkled, all crinkled up, and they were put on August 17th, 2002, and it was beastly hot when they put them on.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, so the beastly hot might have something to do with it, but it's almost exactly to the day.
Yeah.
Or a week off. So. Mm-hmm.
Yes, 8 years. Yeah, 9 years. 9 years, I guess.
Well, there's several very high-quality manufacturers. CertainTeed is one of them. GAF, the Canadian company? I can't think of them right now. But GAF, CertainTeed come to mind. I have CertainTeed shingles on my house. My house was the only one in the neighborhood that survived the last big hailstorm, so without any damage. So, you know, I think that you're probably okay with any one of the higher quality manufacturers.
No.
That's about all I could tell you. I'm really sorry that they failed. We didn't know at the time that it was an issue.
Mm-hmm.
What do you know how good they are? CertainTeed is about getting the claims. I know we have to send a shingle in, mm-hmm. and we haven't done that yet. Do you know how good they are about getting that claim money to you, and or mm-hmm. anything about that?
Yeah, John.
In the few that I've been involved with, they've been very good. Mm-hmm. I think we only had one where there was a little bit of an argument, and as far as I know, I sent them. They sent an inspector out who didn't think that they were bad. I sent some pictures showing the problems with the mat. And as far as I know, they agreed to go ahead and settle that. But generally, I think you're going to have very good success. Mm-hmm. The other thing to remember is that manufacturers aren't idiots. When something fails, they reformulate, they redo it, they retest it. So just because a company has had a failure doesn't mean that their products are low quality or anything. GAF is my standby, and CertainTeed is probably the number two in my book.
Mm-hmm. Good luck.
Yeah, good luck. And kind of to go along with this, we had an email from Shane in Port Wing. Can you talk about maintenance and upkeep of a new white cedar shingle roof? So it's another roof question, but go ahead, John.
Well, if this is good white cedar, which means it probably was shipped from Ontario, this is a very good quality roof, especially if it came from somebody like Mybeck. Our big issue with the roofs is that most of them are not installed correctly. So if it was installed correctly, these roofs need very little maintenance. Mm-hmm. You may want to look at areas on the north side, areas that are in the shade or where you don't get a lot of air movement, where you might get some lichen or fungal growth. Make sure that you've got some galvanized strips that are hidden using galvanized flashing. Mm-hmm. So that will act as a little bit of an herbicide on the fungal growth. But a well-applied cedar roof you should be able to get at least 20 years from if your attic is really nicely ventilated and the shingles dry well and they are on the correct type of skip sheathing. There's no reason you can't get 40 years out of that roof.
All right. There you go. Thank you for that email. And Barney in Burlington has a question for you. Hi, Barney.
Hi. Thanks. I'm just kind of curious, the windows we were talking about, their technology is like, I don't know, thousands and thousands of years old. Has anyone ever tried to advance to a substance that did a better job for an R50? And while you're on the subject, you know, thermos bottle could make a whole house that would warm up, you know, heat it up in September and stay warm all winter. There's no technology out there to advance.
Okay. Well, thanks for that question, Barney. And, John, let me turn back to you again.
Yeah, a good question, Barney. And we have had advances in the last two decades. The low-E glass certainly helps a great deal. The suspended films help, whether they're heat mirror films or films that reduce the thermal loading. You can now reliably get windows in the R4 range. I've never seen anything. I know people claim there's R8 windows. I've never seen any tests that really show it that they're that good. But an R4 window is really pretty decent. One thing we've got to remember with windows is it's not just the window, Barney, but it's how the window is installed. And we see replacement windows all the time where they slam the window in. It's a good window product. It's certified by the National Fenestration Council, and it leaks around all the edges because they never sealed anything.
Or they put it in out of square.
Exactly.
That's another one.
Mm-hmm. So it does. So the installation is where we really need to look. What's funny is the manufacturers, the really good manufacturers like Marvin and Pella and Anderson and H are building very good quality windows. They are certifying their windows, and I've been at meetings with them saying you need to start certifying the installers so that these things work as designed.
That's a very, very good point. Thanks, Barney, for calling. Appreciate your call. And we have an email from Bonnie in Mount Horeb. My basement has a cement floor, but it's cracking and has been heaving upward. Not a lot, but some so you can notice. I have carpet down. Do I need to look at that? Okay, so you got a cracking floor.
Well, it depends. Well, first of all, carpet on a basement floor is something that I tend to shy away from. I don't recommend that to people unless it's a throw rug, something that you can roll up in case you get moisture. You want to take a look at it and see how big the crack is. If it is heaving, is the plane of the one side different than the other? Has one side heaved up, more than, say, a couple of millimeters or, an eighth of an inch, quarter of an inch? If it has, then you want to try to figure out why. Quite often, it also depends on the age of the house. If the house is fairly young, there could be a lot of reasons that it's cracking. It could be just minor shifting because the contractor didn't maybe do a thorough job of tamping everything down. It could be that there's a little groundwater running through underneath, and that's causing some moisture issues that are adjusting the heave. So I would have somebody take a look at it. If you also want to see what kind of moisture you have downstairs, is the humidity level very high? Another thing to test for would to do a long-term radon test. If you're living down in the basement, you have carpet down in the basement, you'll probably want to double check to make sure that you don't have a radon issue. And that would be exacerbated by any sort of break in the floor, whether it be in the vapor barrier underneath, if there is one, or there's a whole lot of questions that come up, and without knowing the age of your house and so forth, and the conditions, I don't think we could give you a good answer other than to have a professional take a look at it, and you'll want to roll up the carpet at least temporarily to see what you have there.
Mm-hmm. Ken Adams of Adams Design Construction, John Freiberger of Freiberger Associates of Fitchburg is our guest today. I'm Larry Mueller. Judith Sears-Poisson, our producer on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Talking home and renovation and repair with Ken Adams and John Freiberger. Thank you so much for listening in. You may have a project that you have a question about or something ailing your home. I hope you'll join in with a question at 1-800-642-1234. Email at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. And we have open lines, so we'll get you on pretty quickly. Let's go to an email from Kathy in Madison. We have insulating window blinds, and in the winter, ice forms on the inside of our windows. then melts, and the window frames get wet. A black mold or mildew grows on them faster than we can keep up with it, certainly unsightly. What about harmful? Is it harmful, and how do we get rid of it and prevent it?
Oh, John and I see this all the time with houses that they put the insulated blinds on the inside. What happens is there's moisture in the house, and moisture always looks for the coldest spot to go to, and then when it hits below the dew point, it condenses. And what it's doing is it's insidiously sneaking around behind the blind, hitting the glass is cold, it condenses, runs down, and then you rot the wood, and the problem just keeps getting worse and worse. You grow mold, you get more moisture in there. The best thing to do, I don't know how long you've had these, but the best thing to do is not to use those blinds or to control the humidity in your home. So it's very difficult in the winter to control the humidity in your home. When it gets to a comfort level, what is it, John, about 24-25% somewhere in there? Mm-hmm. Is a little bit better than that. When it gets to a comfort level, it's too much so, for your home.
Well, if you get below 20, you're going to start getting your sinuses may start bleeding. And the problem in Wisconsin is we tell people maybe look at about 30-35% if you can stand it.
Mm-hmm.
But that's pretty dry on the human beings, and even at 30-35% when it's cold outside, you are going to get condensation on the windows because of what we talked about earlier.
Yep.
The R value just really isn't there. And I agree with Ken. We can't tell you where the mold is hazardous or not. I mean, that's something that you would have to have somebody actually test it and tell you. But you certainly don't want it. And it certainly, as Ken pointed out, is doing a lot of damage to your windows. So I would take a look at those windows. How old are they? Are they? Do they leak a lot of air? Do they need to be weather stripped? If you weather strip these windows, is that area suddenly become warmer because you're not going to have the air infiltration and cold air coming into the room? So look at something other than the window quilts.
And these are a good. This is all a good lead into having an energy audit, a focus on energy style energy audit too, because that they will be able to give you some pretty solid advice about how leaky your windows are, and you can have them tested with the blinds up and the blinds down, and make a judgment. Are you really gaining anything from having those blinds?
We have an email from Gina in Duluth. I have an older home with that has a broken glass window in the porch. The metal frame has been bent in getting the glass out of the window. What's the best way to replace this portion of the window?
Is it the, well, I can't ask the question because it's an email. It's probably the sash.
Yeah.
And it's very likely, if it's metal, that it could be a storm window. And if that's the case, the storm window can be taken out of the frame and taken down to a hardware store and have it repaired or replaced. Mm-hmm. If it's a regular window sash, sometimes they come out easily and sometimes they don't. The simplest thing, if you can lift it out and move it to the side, that might work. If it's anything more than that, I'd hire somebody that knows a little bit about them.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Good luck.
Had a window issue with my in our garage and took it over to the local Martin Glass, and they fellas repaired the window and it came back better than new.
Yeah.
They know what they're doing. Tyler in Lake Geneva, it's your turn. Hi, Tyler.
Hi, guys. How's everyone doing?
Great. Thank you for calling.
Okay. So I was in construction for a number of years, and I'm doing something else now, but my parents approached me with a question about a putting up some siding, and I didn't have an answer to, for them. Basically, what they're doing is they're ordering some pine siding from a producer in Ontario, and the people are suggesting that they put like 1-inch ladding strips underneath the siding to hold it out from the house.
Nice.
And I'm not familiar with that method. I've only put cedar siding up, and we didn't have to do that. So I was wondering if you could give me any advice if this is necessary or...
Sure.
It's not necessary, but it certainly is a very good idea. It's sort of like – it's a good idea. You can liken it to having air in the tires of your car versus leaving them flat because it has the same long-term result. You're buying – I'm assuming this is Ontario white pine, which is a wonderful siding, especially if it's old growth or what they call new old growth. And it really needs to be pre-finished on all sides and put on what's called a rain screen. Now, I believe you can go to the Forest Product Laboratory here in Madison and download installation instructions for it. And there are some really interesting things you can do with it. And if you want, you can always email me at frei at chorus.net, and I can give you more information than you really want on pressure balance spaces and all kinds of things. But this will give you an opportunity to take the old siding off the house, put a complete wind and water barrier on the exterior, install these strips. They have to be screened at the bottom. There's ways of actually venting them into the attic so you get constant airflow through them and pressure balancing. And it will, it may improve the life of that siding by a factor of 5.
Great.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, thanks for your help.
Well, worth it. Thank you very much for calling, Tyler. Barb in Pottsville, Iowa. Or Postville, I'm sorry.
Postville,
yeah. Iowa. Yes, go ahead.
2 years ago, we purchased new pillow windows throughout our house, and the one in the bedroom, it's a double-pane pillow window, and we can feel air and cold whenever you walk by it, and we asked Pella to come out and check it, and they tested it with their tester, and they thought, well, everything's really okay. But it still became an issue, so that fall they came out and put a new window, but we're still having the same problem with it.
Hmm. And what part of the house is it on? What side? North, southeast, or west?
Northeast. Northwest.
Northwest. there is a couple of different possibilities. Is this a replacement window, or was this window removed, the original removed completely, new
it
trim?
It was removed completely.
Okay.
We had a pillow window 10 years prior, mm-hmm. and the wood started to deteriorate, but that window was better than the new one they installed.
Well, if they came out and replaced the window, I could say that that reduces the possibility that there's a problem with the window and that there's something else going on. When they came out and tested, did they test the window? Did they put the house under positive pressure or negative pressure and test to see for infiltration? How did they test it?
He just had like a small hand device that he scanned over the window.
Oh, that's inadequate. I'll just talk to what we had talked about just a few minutes ago about getting an energy audit. If you get an energy audit and you tell your Focus on Energy auditor about this problem, he'll spend more attention in that area of the house. There's a possibility that you've got some leaking going on around the window someplace that's maybe in proximity but not necessarily at the window. Otherwise, if the window itself is leaky, if there is a problem with the unit, either installation or the unit itself, he could determine that too. That would be the first step that I would take. And then make sure that you get a full report. The Focus on Energy people will give you a great report. It's also a good thing for the health of your house in general. Other than that, I can't really speak to it. I mean, it could be a siding issue. It could be a crack someplace that's allowing air to infiltrate. It's on a windy side of the house. Northwest is usually fairly susceptible to wind and. Mm-hmm. That's about the best I can tell you at this mm-hmm. point. Anything to add? Or?
No, I okay. think you're right, Ken. We need to apply a little science to this, and really the way to do that is to depressurize the house and mm-hmm. check with smoke, with smoke
the
candles
smoke stick,
and
yeah.
things, where the air is coming in. And as we said, in one of our perorations earlier, installation is really, really key. You can take a wonderful window and put it in an unsealed hole in the wall, and it is going to leak terribly.
Yeah.
We did re-side the house at the time and re-insulate around the window.
Mm-hmm.
So I really appreciate the information about the energy audit.
Yeah, I think that for a couple hundred dollars.
Well, it's not only going to help you with your window bar, but you may have light fixtures that are leaking a lot of air. It may end up being one of these $400 expenditures that saves you $1,000 in heating and air conditioning costs over the next few years. So really well worth doing.
And it'll certainly add value when you go to sell the house because the energy audit, if you follow some of their recommendations, will be something that will be appealing.
Mm-hmm. Good luck. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. Jim in McQuanago wonders if the plastic you apply to the inside of windows, in the windows, increases their R value or improves it.
Well, I just happen to have some data on that, Larry, from Oak Ridge National Laboratory. And it says yes, at least to R 0.29. Depending upon how leaky the window is, if this is an old double hung from the 1920s with poor weather stripping, and that plastic ends up as an air barrier, it is not only going to be reducing the radiant loss through the window by a small amount, but it is going to be reducing the infiltration, exfiltration by a large amount. So, but be very sure that the plastic is applied on the interior of the house, not on the exterior of the house. If you want your windows to rot out really fast, put plastic on the exterior.
There you go. Josh in Cataract, on to you now. Hi, Josh.
How are you doing today?
Good.
I'm curious why commercial buildings generally have windows that are flush with the pressure boundary of the house or the building. And I'm just curious why manufacturers haven't looked into the possibility of manufacturing windows so that the window panes are actually flush with the pressure boundary instead of the exterior of the home. And the reason would be, obviously, heat doesn't move sideways. Heat moves up. So condensation issues result from heat being trapped inside the sill of the window.
Actually, when we do home designs, we actually put the windows at the pressure boundary. In fact, if we do a complete air barrier, we pretty much have to. Now, it could be that the air barrier is a little bit in front or in back of the plane of the windows, but the most important thing then is to link the windows to the to that particular particular air barrier. If you want to get a bunch of good information on how to do that and design, Google the Building Science Corporation. And Joseph, I'm going to spell the name for you because it isn't pronounced anything. It isn't spelled anything like it's pronounced. But Joseph, last name is LSTIBUREK. Joe writes articles for many, many professional magazines. The ASHRAE Journal, I look forward to every issue to reading his articles. He is one of the foremost people in the United States for design and retrofitting of air and water barriers on buildings, and is basically a brilliant Canadian who we are blessed now living in the Boston area. I've taken multiple classes from him, read his books, read his articles, and you can learn a great deal from him.
There you go.
Okay. Thank you.
Thanks very much for calling, and on to Kim in Fond du Lac. Hi, Kim.
Hi, how are you?
Good. Thank you for calling.
Sure, no problem.
What's on your mind?
My husband and I bought a 1950s ranch about 4 years ago, and the basement is finished. We also have a bedroom in the basement. In the corner of the bedroom, there was a small masonry structure that was L-shaped in the corner. One side of the L was approximately, a foot and a half deep by 2 feet tall, and the other side was approximately the same as well. I've recently started removing that structure and found that there's a pipe underneath there and kind of embedded in the concrete of the basement floor. I'm wondering if this is something typical of 1950s ranch-style homes or what this could be.
No, it's not something that I've seen before in the 50s. Is it possible, does it go down into the floor and then up and out the wall? Is that what you're
Right.
you're saying?
Yes.
So,
but it's not really at the level, I mean, it's above the level of the concrete floor in the basement. So it's, you know, maybe an inch above there. It's not really embedded in that concrete.
Is there a sump system in the house?
There is, yes. It's in the opposite corner of the house.
Hmm. And it's not connected to the wastewater cast iron pipes in any way. Is that correct?
Not as far as we can tell, mm-hmm. but I'm not sure. All I can see is that one little elbow of mm-hmm. the pipe going out of the wall.
Can you describe? Oh, go
I'm
ahead.
Sorry. Yeah, go is ahead. This below the kitchen, Kim?
Nope, it's in the opposite corner.
Okay.
Is it? It's 20 questions. What, do you have any idea how big the diameter of this pipe is and what material it's made out of?
It appears to be cast iron, I guess, but the diameter is I would say about 4 inches.
Oh, that sounds like a drain, some sort of a drain pipe.
Okay.
If it's coming, but you say it's coming up out of the floor?
It is. It's coming out of the, up out of the floor and then kind of curves out to the exterior side of the house.
And what's on the outside of the house?
Just nothing, just landscaping, I guess.
Not a garage or anything?
No, no.
You know, I'm going to speculate here because there's no way of knowing for sure until you do some more investigation, but is it possible that they put some sort of a drain on the outside of the house? Is there an entryway or something close by and they wanted to, I mean, that's the only thing that I could think of. It's not appropriate, yeah. But it's, you know,
there's
it's a possibility.
There's no entryway near there, but mm-hmm. Our gas meter is right in that corner of the house, and I'm wondering, I can't imagine why it would have anything
no.
to do with the gas meter.
No.
Okay.
No.
I don't have any experience with, I have a lot of experience with 50s houses, but I don't have an experience with this happening in any house in the 50s. It uh-huh. sounds like it's the same size and material as a drain pipe, sewer drain. So, I guess they wouldn't have, does it aim out towards the street?
Yes.
Hmm. This is very interesting. And let's see, you're in Fond du Lac?
Is that right?
I wonder, you might go down to the city just for the heck of it, or contact them and see if they have any records of the construction of the property. Now, it's in the 50s, maybe they do, maybe they don't. But if they do, maybe there's some sort of indication there of what that is. Another thing you might consider doing is calling the streets and sanitation people or the street, what do they call them, the city engineers.
Engineering, yes.
Mm-hmm. And check with them and see if they know anything about this, because maybe they've got some sort of record that'll tell you what it is. Other than that, without doing some more investigating, I wouldn't break it. I wouldn't break it until you know exactly what you got.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. Oh, boy. From Amanda in Wausau, an email: the previous owners re-roofed my house in 2006. There's a spot that the home inspector pointed out when I bought the house in 2010 where there are two separate roof parts that overlap, the garage roof and the house roof, with about 4 inches of the side of the house between them. It's part of the side of the house, but there is no flashing, siding, or anything in this space. I think it's causing water damage in the entryway.
Oh, you betcha. You betcha. They roofed it and did not flash it. You're going to have to do some kind of flashing there. And it's going to have to be done by a roofer that knows what they're doing. My guess is what happened is that the seller hired somebody that was the least expensive. And mm-hmm. normally, the inexperienced people forget flashing first. That's one of the earmarks of inexperience, is they do the flashings improperly. So get an experienced roofer over there, have that flash properly, and you should be good to go.
Let's go to Kim in Chippewa Falls next. Kim, hello to you.
Hey, good morning. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
My question deals with flooring in the basement. We ripped up some old carpeting that was down there. It had gotten wet during a previous flooded area, nothing bad, just enough damp enough that it had an odor to it. So we tore it all up. We went to put down something in a form of hardwood. But I know that if we put real hardwood down, that's a problem with moisture. So we're just curious about laminate and manufactured flooring and what we have to put down as a barrier. What are the steps necessary to have a nice-looking floor down there that will be durable in the basement?
John?
Well, Kim, I think whether it's a laminate or actual hardwood, you have to be careful of moisture. We just had a massive failure on a 110-unit new building here where moisture coming out of the concrete floors caused all of the laminate to have to be ripped up and replaced. So just because it's laminate and they claim that it's good in high humidity areas doesn't mean it's really true. First, you have to make sure that your basement's never going to flood again. So you're going to have to determine why it got wet that time, and you're going to have a good cure for that.
It was a man-made problem. Somebody left a hose running right next to the foundation.
Okay, great. That's an easy one to take care of, isn't it? What I would suggest you do is first insulate the floor and put down rigid insulation on the floor, and it needs to have a compressive strength of 25 PSI because there's lots of different types of insulation. Some of them you can put boards on and they won't sink into the insulation. Some, if you put boards on them, they're going to sink. You need to have, over the top of that insulation, a 16 mil or better poly vapor diffusion retarder, air retarder. So that is going to keep any moisture that gathers down in that insulation system from coming up. Then you can put pressure-treated sleepers. You're probably going to need to use 2x6s unless you get insulation that is better than 25 PSI. But with 25 PSI, you're going to need 2x6s on 16-inch centers. And then you can put your wood frame for your floor, your subflooring on top of those sleepers, and then apply either your laminate or your natural hardwood above that. So what you're doing is you're insulating the floor, so you're taking care of the temperature mm-hmm. differential. You're putting a vapor barrier on the floor to keep it dry. You're giving it an airspace, so it has a little bit of breathability, and you're giving it a firm basis to which you can apply a floating floor system or a maple or an oak or a bamboo or any other kind of system.
There you go.
Wow, so you're physically raising the floor 3 or 4 inches higher with a brand new substructure then.
That is correct, and you have to take a look at the headroom in your basement because the state code says that rooms in basements have to have an average head height of 7 feet. And if you only have 7 feet now, you could have a problem. If that's the case, take a look at putting in a ceramic floor. You can do some interesting things with ceramic now. You can use heat mats, which are really, what Ken, what's the one that we use most frequently? It's really quite inexpensive. Comfort floor, is that it?
Comfort floor, there's warm something or other.
Comfort floors.
The one problem there, too, is that they don't have insulation underneath the concrete, so as much heat is going to go down as comes up, so you're not going to get an ideal situation unless you can insulate underneath. So if you've got the headroom, John's got the best solution that you could do. If you do run into the headroom issue, we've had luck applying for a variance so that we can build rooms especially an existing room that we're repairing in a basement that doesn't meet the code.
Mm-hmm. There you go. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate it. John Freiberger of Freiberger & Associates of Fitchburg, Ken Adams of Adams Design Construction in Madison, our guests. Larry Mueller here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. If you have a home remodeling repair issue, I hope you'll join in with your questions at 1-800-642-1234, email at talk@wpr.org, or post a photo or a question on our Facebook page. Just go to The Larry Mueller Show for that. And we have Tim calling from Colorado. Tim, hello.
Hi. I got a question for you guys. Or actually maybe two, and then a comment. I have a 115-year-old double brick two-story house, and for 15 years I've been trying to insulate it. But I made my own storm windows for it and about 10 years ago. And for the connection between the storm window wood and the, what do you call, guys call that, on the outside and the wood on the outside that surrounds the window?
The brick molding?
The molding. It's actually wood. That connection there, you know, since it's such an old house, it waves back and forth a little bit. So I decided I'm going to just use wool stripping, and that's what I use. Is that a good idea? I figured that would allow a little bit of, you know, moisture and air movement through so I wouldn't have all that moisture buildup problems.
Well, my guess is that it would be just fine, but what you'll probably want to do is not seal up the bottom of the storm window to allow any moisture that develops in there to roll off the top of the sill.
Gotcha.
Does that seem reasonable to you, John?
Yes, it does.
Okay. But sounds like you took on a real project.
Oh, yeah, it was. But you know how expensive windows are. I didn't know what I was getting into, so.
You said you had another question?
Yeah, and an energy question. This one's really wild. And then if I could do a quick comment on energy, too. I had a energy audit done here in this state, and our city actually subsidizes them. And one of the areas that turned out that would be really bad is the attic door. But I don't even have a door. I just have a piece of wood.
Yeah.
And I was thinking when I redo that, can I make that thing so it's hinged or something like that? So in the summer, out here in the evening, it cools off, like yesterday was 61 degrees. So can I drop that attic door down in the evening and allow a, you know, like they do in the Arab countries, a hot air chimney effect thing occur? Maybe you can explain that.
Well, what you're asking is if you can open your hatch to allow the heat of the house to escape through the roof as the as it heats up.
Yeah,
that works. I mean, they do that sort of thing here in Wisconsin. A lot of times they'll use a power vent called a whole house vent, and you have to make sure that you have adequate roof ventilation to make that work. As long as you've got a good inflow of air from the from around the inside of the house, it should work well. I mean, John's got sort of not in my court here on this.
Yeah, we almost never disagree. But
well, you just open it up once and see how it works.
The problem is we have interesting stuff in attics. I mean, there's a reason why I never go into an attic without a respirator on.
Well, that's another issue.
And what I'm, you know, I think if there was a, you know, if you had like a duct shaft or something going out through the roof, yeah, that would make sense. Mm-hmm. But I'm a little bit worried. This thing stays open all night. The sun comes up in the morning, starts heating the attic air. There's maybe not enough roof venting. And we start pushing some interesting stuff out of the attic, you know, mold spores, you know, a little bit of dust from some rodent droppings, a little histoplasmosis.
Yeah, that's a good point. I can't argue with you there.
Yeah, I this is the reason why I really am negative on whole house fans as well. I really think the attic and the house has to be totally separated. I think it makes a certain amount of sense to put a large exhaust fan in that is ducted directly outside that you can't get feedback through and that you can seal in the winter. But just opening up the hatch and, you know, hoping that the air buoyancy is going to help you, I'm afraid could give you some indoor air quality issues that might be a lot worse than putting up with the heat.
Yeah, there you go.
That's a very good point. I have a comment. For the very first caller, I have a lecture once maybe 12 to 15 years ago. A fellow from Europe came in, and he talked about European designs, and they had just built a commercial building. And they had, next to the building, they had enough land where they had dug a huge hole, put down a stainless steel tank, and used that stainless steel tank as a hot water, cool water system that would, so the tank seasonally would turn over. So in the winter, the water in there would be warm, and they would circulate that through the building. And then in the summer, from the winter, the water would turn over and be cold. And they would take that and circulate that through the winter, helping cool down the building.
Yeah. That's a geothermal system.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Very very common.
And I have one.
Yeah, Larry's got a geothermal. He's got five wells in his side yard underneath his driveway that heats his house and cools it in the summer. It's becoming more and more popular. And the federal government is now giving a tax credit for, I think it's up to 30% of the cost of putting a geothermal system into your house. It still makes it expensive, but it makes it doable for a lot more people now. And yeah, I think it's great. It's almost like a perpetual motion machine. You're, mm-hmm. you know, you're borrowing the heat from the ground in the winter and the coolness mm-hmm. of the ground in the summer.
We're even seeing designs that utilize local ponds and lakes. Yeah. In Hawaii, cool. They are using the water features and the mm-hmm. swimming pools to provide air conditioning the day,
thermal
heat at night. Yeah. I think people might be able to go to the ASHRAE Journal, Tim, and you may be able to download some of the interesting articles on using, I mean, basically what a pond is it's a stainless steel tank at the surface without the stainless steel tank, and a lot cheaper. But the ASHRAE Journal really has some fascinating articles, and I'm really glad I became a member of it some years
ago.
And
that's the American Society of...
Heating, Air Conditioning, and Refrigerating Engineers, yeah. ASHRAE, yes. I found that I was talking so much about these things. It might be good to
actually know what you're talking about.
Know what I'm talking about, yes.
Tim, thanks a lot for calling.
Thank you very much.
Appreciate your call. They just had their national meeting in Canada, ASHRAE, not a month ago or so.
That's right. A very successful meeting.
Harold in Superior, we are on to you. Hi, Harold. Thanks for calling.
Well, I was wondering if you were going to get to me. I have another side comment here in addition to what I discussed with the screener, if that's okay. I'd just like to mention that, you know, we're talking about basements, and I put in ceramic floor in our utility area in the basement, and I call it my 100-year floor. I don't have to worry about it anymore. If if I have some leaks in the basement, no problem. It's easy to clean, and it acts as a vapor barrier. And likewise, I put in VCT tile in my shop down there, and I feel like it's, you know, if there is any radon issues, which I don't think are, but, you know, it seals everything up and the bad spots on the floor, and easy to clean, don't have to paint it every few years, doesn't chip. So I'm really thrilled with that. And we were talking about windows earlier, and boy, it seems like every 15, 20 years, the windows are twice as good as they were before. I just am, you know, very impressed by the technology, and it's just a matter of, well, how much can you afford? You know, you can good, better, best, and outrageous. But I built homes at one time, and people asked about the quality. I said, I can build you anything you want. You know, can you afford it?
Mm-hmm.
I recently put in four windows on the sides of our front porch, vinyl windows, which I really like because of the maintenance, and they blended in with the old windows. And that was quite a challenge because it was like, you know, it was originally an open porch, so it had a natural slope to it, and you could only jack it up so much. And so it's like putting in windows in a trapezoid. What a challenge. And then I found out my front wall even is out of plumb because of settling, which I didn't realize till I was done. But the front of our porch is all that old leaded glass, and we've talked about replacing it. But in the wintertime, you know, it gets pretty cold up here, and I have a thermometer out there shaded, and it gets to be 100 degrees. And if there's any sun at all, it hardly matters what the temperature is outside. So we open up the door about, any time between 11 and 2 o'clock in the afternoon, and that hot air comes gushing in, goes up the stairway, heats upstairs. Likewise, we have a big window up there facing south. And I would say between upstairs windows there, double slide-bys, and all these windows in the front, we must get a third of our heat from that. It's just... And it's free and it's easy, and I'd encourage more people to take advantage of that. In fact, I did with our son, and they did just that.
That's great. That's really, you know, I think any time that you could take advantage of the sun, especially when it's low tech like that, you know, have a window, heat up the space, and use it. That really is. You know, it's a good thing for your pocketbook, it's a good thing for your household, and it's a good thing for the environment. It's positive all the way around.
You know, our three-season porch that we have on the back of our new home,
mm-hmm.
that should accomplish a little of that, too, or should at least keep it warm.
Yeah, it's longer. South by southeast. Yeah,
yeah,
I think so.
South by southeast mm-hmm. should help. Well, Harold, thank you so much. Appreciate your call. And we have lots of callers online. Here's a window question again. My husband and I are having our windows measured tomorrow for new windows. After a bunch of quotes, we landed on Custom Windows Plus. Are we making the right decision? We're going with the Elite window. Our home's at least 50 years old, and they're going to insulate the weight pockets from our old windows and add aluminum wraps where they are missing. Anything else we need to think about?
Well, that's a good question. I don't know anything about those windows. John, have you heard anything about them?
I don't know them either.
Mm-hmm. So that doesn't mean that they're not good. It just means that we don't know about them. So I would suggest if you don't have a good history of them, to do some research. You can check online. You can check with Consumer Reports. Check with some other customers. Ask for at least 4 or 5 customers to go and talk to, especially people who have had them in their house for more than a few years. Say, tell them you'd like customers that have had, had them done 5 years or longer, and then make a decision. I can't read your email very well, but it says that your house is 50 years old. You've got some sash weights. Make sure that those are the sash weight pockets or cavities are insulated well. Ask them how they're planned to do that, and Just check the manufacturer's or check. What am I trying to say? do your research.
Rated. Yeah, check on how they're rated.
Yeah.
By others.
By others, by independents.
Yeah. John, anything to add on that?
Check the installer also. Make sure that they have no complaints against them with Department of Consumer Protection. Go through simple case search. Make sure no one has sued them.
You know, one other thing that comes to mind is the company Tyvek, T-Y-V-E-K, is it? They have on their website, they have a how to install a window flashing unit. Take a look at that and print off a copy and ask your installer what they think of that installation process. And if your installer, you'll learn a lot about what he thinks by the description that he gives you of that. That's good a very time. Good installation process, by the way, on the Tyvek website.
Ken Adams of Adams Design Construction in Madison, John Freiberger of Freiberger & Associates of Fitchburg, our guests here. They'll be with us right up until 12:30 on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Talking home renovation and repair on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here, my guest Ken Adams of Adams Design Construction in Madison, and John Freiberger of Freiberger & Associates of Fitchburg. Great to have them along, and thank you for listening in. Lots of callers online. We have Facebook questions. We have emails, all kinds of things. So let's go to the phones. Amy in Wausau, thank you for calling. Hello.
Hi. We have a lot of roof lines on our house. It's a 17-year-old roof that we have, and it definitely needs repair. The the western exposure is all day, and the surface is curling up. I don't think it'll make it through another winter. And the heat on it is all year round. Is there a recommended type of surface that we would put on there, excluding metal, because that's a little bit out of our budget? We're anticipating probably being out of this house within 8-9 years. But lots of roof lines too. And what are the thoughts about contracting for something like that versus having a do-it-yourself job if you have a lot of different roof lines and the warranties about that?
Oh, I would not do it myself.
You would not do it yourself?
Not if you've got multiple roof lines. That means you've got hips and valleys and lots of things that, and not unless you have experience doing, you know, if you've done 30 or 40 roofs, I'd do it myself. If you haven't done 30 or 40 roofs, I'd leave it to a professional. Because it sounds like a complicated roof. So I would also say that if money is an issue, I would get a good, at least 30-year shingle. Could be asphalt. Most of them are asphalt fiberglass now. And you can start from there. But get a name brand. Don't get an off-name brand. Be careful. Be very wary if you are thinking about buying them at a big box store. I would buy them directly from a supplier that supplies roofing materials to make sure you've got a chain of people that you can go to if there's ever any issues. Hire a local contractor that's got good experience with roofing. He's going to need to know about ventilation, because if your house is 16 years old, there's a chance that there's been some ventilation issues in your attic that might need to be addressed. If a roofer has little experience with ventilation, he could create more problems than he can solve. So ask questions like, tell me what sort of insulation or what sort of ventilation I need in my attic. Is my attic insulation acceptable to code? Ask him what is the code. He should know that it's 1 foot for every 300 square feet of floor space, and 50% of that needs to be low, and the eaves and the rest of it up high. So these are questions to ask, but I would definitely not do it myself.
Okay. And anything about the certainty? We had certainty as singles before, and we're under that same as the earlier caller was, that recall. And, with that, is that completely closed? Because we never got notice about that. We just knew our roof was looking bad.
Yeah, as in the case of most companies with recalls, it's kind of up to you to contact them. They don't usually go out of their way unless they're forced to by law. But if you do have that
closed door at this point, because the house is 17 years old, is that still open to the consumer or no?
I don't know. I couldn't tell you that for sure. But you could start by checking their website. You could check with Consumer Reports, you could check with the state of Wisconsin and see if there are any open suits or if there is some opportunities for you. John, you have a lot more experience with litigation than I do. Is there anything else that you can check quickly?
I think that's it. Part of it depends upon what this shingle was warranted for, whether it was a 20-year shingle or a 30-year shingle. Obviously, if it's a 30-year shingle and it's only halfway through through its life, there's going to be much more recourse. But Ken has had a really good point on the heat. If this shingle curled up on the west side because your attic is too hot, there's no warranty.
Mm-mm.
So you really, Ken's question is very well put. You've got to talk to these people and make sure that the surface the shingles sit upon do not get so hot that it damages them.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thanks a lot for calling. And then kind of again relating to this, Karen from Winona, Minnesota, this relates to an earlier caller about roofing. Please tell the caller that a roofer can help her get a prorated refund from CertainTeed, and they will also give you a discount to buy their shingles again. So that's well worth mentioning. And Sharon in Milwaukee, it's your turn. Hi, Sharon.
Hello, how are you?
Great, thanks for calling.
Oh, thank you. I just happened to be listening. Well, not happened, but nevertheless, I usually listen to your station, but I'm glad that I'm able to hear your show because I got an old 1939, I guess like Cape Cod house, and it's got Lannan stone on the front. And on that Lannan stone, there are some black areas I noticed, and they're in a certain spot. And I noticed that when it rains, it's coming from, I hope I'm saying this right, the flashing. It's like an overhang. There's a big picture window, and then there's, a couple of black spots, like maybe mold or something. But it's coming down from a specific area right under the overhang of the window there. So I did have someone to look at that, and they said it's all rusted up under there. So I got some caulk that I was going to, for roofing, I believe, I was going to put that up under there. But then I wonder, where is that excess water going to go? And so I don't have any water or anything coming inside the house. Everything is dry. It's just that the water, comes down on the facing of the house there, which is where this Lannan stone is.
Okay. John?
Well, Sharon, what I'd like you to do, if you can, is go in the basement and look in the sill boxes underneath the section of stone wall. If you see water stains or the beginning of decay in that area, then you've got a more serious problem than if you don't. The stone in 1939 was put up in a different way than we do it today. Now we have a 1-inch airspace in back of it, and we have drains in the bottom because all stone leaks. So water gets through, and you probably have older stone. And there are cracks in the mortar, so water is getting behind, and it's draining out certain places. And it's probably draining out where this old flashing was. You really need to talk to a restoration mason contractor and have them take a look at it and have them give you really good advice. The type of mortar that you had may have been a soft mortar. Actually, with the Lannan stone, it better have been a soft mortar. It was probably a lime-based bonder in it. And all of these things are very important to have. This is why you need a restoration mason, not just somebody who's going to get gray Portland at the hardware store and sort of slap it on and cause even greater problems. But okay. You've gotten a lot of years. You've gotten 72 years already out of the stone, so it's time to spend a little money and have somebody knowledgeable take a look at it.
Yeah, there you go. Thank you very much for your call. Appreciate it very much. And Prue in Port Washington, on to you now. Hi.
Hi, I have a house built in 1880, Victorian cottage, and it has a very steep stairway. The stair height is about 8.5 inches, and then they're a little bit, they're not as deep as, I guess, modern stairs are.
Mm-hmm. It's kind of dangerous, almost like a ladder.
Yeah, so, well, I don't know if it's that bad, but so they're only 9.5 inches in depth.
Yeah.
So, it's getting to be kind of hard work going up and down. And I'm wondering what kind of, if I were to get them rebuilt, mm-hmm. I'm afraid they wouldn't fit in the space.
That's a real concern. and you need to look at a couple of things.
Okay.
The most important thing usually is the headroom at the bottom of the stairs, or these stairs from the first floor to the second floor.
Yeah.
So you want to look on the first floor. If you were to take a yardstick, some sort of a straight edge, and lay it on the edges of the stairs so it lays up the stairs, and then measure straight up from there to the ceiling, right where the ceiling ends and the opening begins, the minimum opening you should have is 6 foot 4 inches, or 6 foot 6 foot 8 inches would be ideal.
That's from that.
So it's, you're measuring basically from the tip of the stairs directly up. If you have significantly more than that, then you might be able to add a step or two to make your stairs a little more safe and meet code. The code currently reads that the maximum height of the stair can be 8 inches. And I think that's changing soon to be a little less than that. But right now, it's the maximum height is 8 inches, and the maximum distance from the tip of one stair to the tip of the other stair is 9 and 9 1/4, I think. So it sounds like you might be okay with your run, but not so much with your riser. So probably you need one, maybe two steps. That's the first thing to check. Are you thinking of hiring a contractor to do the work?
Yeah,
I would definitely do that, and I'd hire somebody that's got some good experience with older homes, because I've seen some pretty hacked up stairways.
Okay.
And you want to make sure the style fits. Maybe they can use some of the old materials if you've got some nice old oak and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Does that help?
Yeah, I think so. There's a little landing at the. Stairs goes up, there's a little landing, and then they switch directions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Rest the way up. Is there a size that has to be, too?
Well, the code reads 3 foot by 3 foot, but your house is probably, my guess is it's probably smaller, probably 33, 34 inches wide, just because that's kind of normal for that period. So,
okay.
But if it's rebuilt and you're going for, you go get your permit, you apply for what's called a building variance. And they will allow you to build it in the existing opening to substandard, not necessarily to code, but as close to code as you possibly can get it. And it's pretty easy to do. It probably cost you $50, and it would cost you a week or so of time.
Okay.
Where are you located, Port Washington?
Yes.
Yeah, so you've got good inspection departments up in that area, so you should be fine.
Okay.
Good luck to you.
All right, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. We have a Facebook question from Lorraine. What's the warmest floor to put in a kitchen dining area that's built on a crawl space? So the floor is over a crawl space. We've considered cork, but I'm afraid it would be easily plucked by cats. well, we have cork in
cats.
We have cork in our kitchen, and Judith is saying, yeah, they have a cat too, and we've never had the plucking problem. I really like the cork floor in the kitchen.
Cork's got a really nice feel to it, doesn't it?
Oh,
it's soft.
Great.
And but one of the things that you want to do is make sure that your floor is insulated, or your crawl space is insulated too, because no matter what you put down there, it's not going to be ideal unless you can warm the space underneath somehow. So that's what I would do first. But if you like cork, I'd say cork is great.
Yeah.
I don't think cats, unless you have lots of cats that are cats. Huh. Cats are never unruly, are they?
No.
Cork should hold up. It's a lot sturdier than you think.
And a Facebook question from Joan. We turned an existing porch into a four-season sunroom, insulated the floor, but didn't put any heat source or air conditioning in this room, so it'll fluctuate with the temperature. What type of flooring do you suggest for this room, where you've got these fluctuating temperatures?
Oh, go ahead, John.
Well, Larry, I like the oldest porch floor in the world, or at least in America, which is vertical grain dug fir.
Yeah.
It has a beautiful finish on it. As long as it's vertical grain, it takes getting wet. It takes changes in temperature. It's immensely stable.
It's beautiful.
And certainly much more forgiving than a hardwood like an oak or a maple, not terribly expensive. But you have to make sure that you say you want vertical grain, because they're selling a lot of dug for porch flooring now that has face grain that will lift on you.
Oh.
But many of us have houses that were built 100 years ago, and we have these very old vertical grain dug fir porches, and they still exist. So yeah. This is already protected from the weather. So I don't know why you couldn't get 100 years out of a nice dug fir floor in there and have it look beautiful as well.
And let's see, an email from Richard in Mequonago. My vinyl windows separated from their wooden frames during the winter and pretty much closed back up during the warmer months. Can you recommend a fix for that?
The cynical one is replace the windows with something a little bit better quality. What you'd want to look at is why they're separating. And if they're separating because the wood is shrinking and the vinyl is expanding, you may be able to glue the with a like an RTV silicone or some sort of flexible glue the two together. That may get you some time. You could have a bad window. When I see this happen, that's usually an indication that the window's got a finite life left, and this is not unusual for vinyl.
The problem we have here is we have dissimilar materials or materials that have different coefficients of expansion under thermal load and even moisture load, because the vinyl doesn't have any, but the wood does. Mm-hmm. So this is just plain bad design is what it sounds like.
Yeah. Good luck with it. If you can do it, step up one window grade at least or more.
And a Facebook comment. You need to inform your listeners of the dangers associated with building a new home or remodeling. The state refuses to enforce the building codes, which puts people, their health and safety in jeopardy.
I can't talk about that. I work with inspectors all the time.
I can.
John, what
do
you think?
We're fortunate here in
Madison.
Larry, I
really wish this hadn't turned up because, you know, if we inform people, then I'm going to be out of work because I'm spending a huge amount of time right now on structurally unsound houses, condos, commercial buildings that were built in the last 5 years that were inspected by municipal inspectors who just plain did not do their job. You will find that in some communities around Madison, 90% of the masonry on single-family homes simply does not meet code. You'll find electrical things that don't meet code, structures that are wrong. It really has been a problem. There are now lawsuits out there where we have communities that have hired private engineers rather than having municipal or county employees. Some of the courts are taking a look at that, is that these people don't have sovereign immunity. But it really is a political issue because you can't sue City Hall, as they say, and in this case you really can't. But people need to get politically involved. Now that we have very little going on, we have these same inspectors who missed so much doing job justification, where they're coming in and picking on things that are actually just fine, trying to fill up the day because they have little to do. So there are some cities that have some very, very good people, like the city of Madison. Mm-hmm. There are other communities that we get into where the...
Well, how do you protect yourself then? I mean, as someone doing...
You hire a home inspector.
Yeah.
And many people in surrounding communities hire our firm to come in and do a code compliance inspection. Now, many inspectors don't do code compliance inspectors, but they can at least come in and punch list and take a look at obvious problems.
You also hire contractors who really know what they're doing, people that have a long experience of doing, you know, the right kind of work, aren't being sued constantly and really understand what's going on. Designers, contractors who are designers or have designers on staff tend to be a little more professional. NARI members is another one. It's if you have people who are members of organizations like NARI tend to be higher, you know, they have higher standards than some of the other contractors that are out there.
Well, there's a reason why professionals are called professionals.
Exactly.
And if you're building a new home and it's a set of what we call builder's plans that somebody picked up at a convention at Las Vegas, you have no protection.
Yeah.
But if you hire an architect and that architect designs that house and you have them come in and do inspections, you're going to end up with a well-built house.
Absolutely.
There is nothing more expensive than going cheap.
I'm working on one right now that was built 3 years ago, and they have to replace every window on the lakeside because of substandard work.
Yeah.
So
So there you are. There so you there's are. A little truth to that.
It's really unfortunate, Larry, especially in a state like Wisconsin, where we pride ourselves on good government and good government service, that we've had so many mistakes happen in the last decade during the building boom. Mm-hmm. Taxpayers did not want to fund a lot of inspectors for the cities. People got overloaded. Things got subbed out to private firms. People weren't paying enough. And as a result, we have literally millions and millions and millions of dollars of defects built into our buildings now.
Jim and Brown Deer, we'll turn to you. Hi, Jim.
Hi, how are you, Larry? Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
You know, I just wanted to make a couple comments. First of all, great show.
Thanks.
But the one of the things that does concern me is that some of the questions that are being answered are being answered more from the perspective of a builder versus a remodeler. For instance, as far as window ratings, there was a caller earlier who had asked about how does she know what the best type of window is? And really, there's really only one place that she should look, and that's the National Fenestration Rating Council. And if she's looking for efficiency, that's the place that is going to tell you exactly where that, what the rating is for that window. Now, I run a blog, it's WisconsinEnergyMasters.com/blog, and it'll tell you all about the importance of U factors. And the lower the U factor, the better. The other comment I wanted to make is that your guests had talked about Tyvek flashing. I'm going to agree with them from a new construction standpoint. I think that they were dead on that it is a good system. However, from a remodeling standpoint, and I think your guests will confirm this, that what you want, what you're doing is you're putting your window into your existing jambs and headers, and to reflash it would really be kind of ridiculous. And I think that that caller had asked about how to find out what the best type of a window was. The brand that she talked about, I don't know who that brand was either, but what she should do is she should ask that company who the manufacturer was, because it is highly likely that what the company did was they simply rebranded an existing manufacturer's window.
You know, I'm just, unfortunately, I'm going to have to break in because we're about out of time. John, a comment from you?
Well, we mentioned earlier the National Fenestration Council, and the problem that we have is we have certified windows installed by people who aren't certified, and this is the big problem we're finding in remodeling. Mm-hmm. Good windows poorly installed, and therefore they leak around the edges.
Yeah.
The other thing that I think is just so important is that if you're looking for a quality company, that company should, and they're selling the vinyl window, they should really be encouraging their customers to go with triple pane, because I can't tell you how many customers I've run into and they've done some double pane windows and they're just horrible.
You guys agree with that?
Not necessarily. The testing at Oak Ridge Lab actually shows that a double pane with low-E glass and suspended film performing better than triple insulated with a half-inch airspace.
Oh.
So it really depends. There are so many different ways of building a window. So as Tim or Jim says, you really need to investigate that particular window, look at the U factor and everything else on them before you make a decision, because it is complicated.
Guys, thank you so much. Ken Adams of Adams Design Construction in Madison, John Freiberger of Freiberger & Associates of Fitchburg, our guests today. And thank you for listening. Stay with us.